Howdy, y'all. You're listening to The Managing Up Show, a podcast about leading and managing in the world of technology. I'm your host, Travis Weisgut, and with me this week are Nick Means.
Hey, everybody.
And Brandon Hayes.
Hello. So I just wanted to start by letting people know, we know that we were sort of sparsely available through the summer. We kind of knew that was going to be the case, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were always on vacation of some kind or other, and we couldn't get any real overlap. And I just wanted to kind of check in and have you all file your report of what you did on your summer vacation. So Nick, what did you get up to this summer?
So we just got back about a week ago from 2 weeks in California, which we luckily timed with the arrival of 100 degree temperatures here in Austin. So it was nice to go to San Diego and sit on the beach and enjoy the 75 degree air blowing in from the ocean.
So why did you come back?
That's a really good question. Probably because we ended our trip at Disney, and goodness gracious, I needed a break from that. And we walked about 22 miles over 2 days. They were amazing days, but man, sitting on the plane the next day sure felt good.
That's funny. We had the exact same experience, I think like a week apart, right? We were at Disney on 1 week, and same deal. Like I think we totaled like 23, 24 miles in 2 days, and I mean, just wrung out. And the thing they don't tell you about being a parent and vacationing is you have to keep up with your kids at their maximum energy level, and then you have to physically carry them for the rest of the time. And so like that wound up being like, I was closing my exercise rings on my Apple Watch that week for sure.
You were closing it by lunchtime.
Yeah, it was bananas. It was a lot of fun. You know, Disney, it's a lot. They got that Star Wars land. But we also did a Disney vacation this summer. It was our first time at Disneyland since I was like 6 years old. So a lot of fun. But yes, you actually get on your plane to come home and you're like, yep, this is...
that was fun. I am more than happy to sit here and look at the pictures and remember how fun it was.
Yeah. What about you?
So I went to another state that starts with a C, but I went to Colorado and up to the mountains. Spent a week and a half up there getting some mountain biking in and some road riding in and remembering how much I love the mountains. It's one of those things. I grew up in a city in West Texas that's split by the mountains, El Paso. And you're used to having that on the horizon all the time. Like wherever you look, there's mountains that you can see. And if I had to peg one thing about Austin that I wish it had, that would be like, okay, this is what completes Austin. It would be mountains. I spent a good chunk of time up in the Boulder area and seriously started looking at real estate while I was there.
I actually was in Denver last week, and a friend of mine that had just moved there from Austin said, all right, you're going to get out here and you're going to start wondering, I wonder what it is to live here. And it does happen. It's, I don't know. It has an effect on you for sure.
Yeah. Well, one of the good things is like looking at the real estate prices, as long as I kept it in the Boulder area, was enough to scare me off.
Yeah.
Yep.
So for my part, I was able to sort of really almost on accident unplug of a new role at a company, and I'm managing a team at a kind of a larger mid to large company now. And because there's like an official IT policy there, they have this whole like rigmarole around either bring your own phone or use a company issued phone. And I was like, well, let's try the company issued phone and see how big a pain that is. Turns out, yeah, it's pretty big. But one thing that happens is on vacation, I take my work phone and I throw it in my backpack, and I didn't check it for a week. I just didn't check it. I don't know what emails came in. I don't know what Slack messages came through. I had no clue what was happening at work. And I'm new enough that you can kind of like just get away with that by default. But also, I know other people that make a habit of that. And it was really interesting to completely unplug from work and not feel like needed, or I figured, you know, somebody will call my regular cell phone if there's an actual emergency, and nobody did. So I'm curious to know, like, how did you treat your various like vacations? Like, do you completely unplug, or do you kind of stay plugged in, or do you wind up working through it?
I mean, my experience was similar. There was one thing happening company-wide that I knew I was going to have to wrap up the first couple of days we were on vacation. So I had to be available for a couple of meetings those 2 days. And then after that, I actually signed out of my work Slack so that the only way I could be reached is if somebody sent me a text. And I'm free with my cell phone number. Everybody could have texted me if there was an emergency, but I didn't hear anything. I didn't check email. And I got back, and lots of amazing stuff had happened while I was gone, which is just an incredibly gratifying feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always make sure to have my phone number in my Slack profile. I think it was one of the default fields for a long time. And then some people got used to doing it and some didn't. I'm one of the ones that got used to doing it. And I feel pretty good about just saying, okay, yeah, no push notifications from Slack. If people need to get in touch with me for something, they know how to get in touch with me. And the phone is the way to make that happen. I say that as my normal practice. My vacation was a little bit more of a working vacation. I managed to get a couple of good days completely disconnected, but also had a handful of days where I was doing the traveling and working thing, sitting in a coffee shop or hunkered down in an Airbnb, getting some work done. Since I was traveling and everybody knew that I was in different time zones from my normal schedule and wasn't keeping normal meetings and things like that, it turned into some really productive work time because I had pretty much cleared my calendar except for the few days. I was like, I'll be around these days if you need me for something. So that worked really well. But I have been in larger companies where it's been a complete disconnect. And it's like, if everything's really on fire and you don't know how to solve a problem, here's my phone number. But I've also had that trip where it's like, I'm traveling international and I have no idea if I'm going to have cell service, much less if I'm going to have a data access or even have my laptop with me.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. The amount of freedom that you have to take a completely disconnected vacation depends so much upon the supporting cast that you have around you, the people that share the context that you have on a daily basis and can step in and fill in for you while you're gone. I have a couple of really excellent product partners and a very supportive boss at work. And anything that came up while I was gone, they were widely able to step into my shoes. And the few things they couldn't, it waited until I got back. But that's because I work for a large company and I have that kind of support around me.
Yeah, I work for a company. We're probably about the same size as your entire team, Nick, for the whole company. So there's definitely a lot more of shared hat wearing in our organization. So you get into situations like, oh, Travis is the person who knows that. But it serves as a really good stress test. I believe this has come up on the podcast before, talking about treating almost forced vacations as a chaos monkey, where it's like, okay, hey, you're taking a week vacation starting now. Doing that with a little bit lower stakes where you use that as a point to see like, okay, what's painful? What can't happen while I'm gone? And this goes for like you as a manager, like what are the things that you're a blocker on, but also for your team members? Like what's a blocker when Bob is out of the office? What can't happen because he's the only one that has the context? Or what part of the release gets held up when Alice is not available? And it gives you that thing to come back and be like, okay, this is a conversation we need to have because this is something that couldn't happen. Like, how can you get this context spread amongst the rest of the team? How can you make sure that, this sounds horrible, but how can you make sure that you're replaceable? I think this goes especially true for managers. Like if you're the blocker on something happening with your team, like that's a horrible place to have yourself. And especially as more senior developers on the team, you should be thinking about it the same way. If you're out or inaccessible for any reason and things can't happen with you, like that's a sign, okay, this is an area to focus on. What documentation do I need to get into place? What automation do I need to put here or there? It can be really illuminating to use that opportunity to try to underline the points where you have issues with stress.
Yeah, I like that idea because in a startup, you are kind of the pilot often. Like when you're in a very small startup, you're part of the pilot program for whether vacations, you know, are possible. You are the chaos monkey, right? You are the person that's stress testing the entire system and seeing what breaks when you leave. And you're the only person that has the login to Google Apps and somebody needs access to their email for something and they've lost their password or, you know what I mean? Like there's always... because of all of the hat wearing, there's no documentation at that stage about who's wearing what hats. It just sort of barely holds itself together. And that can be kind of fun. That can be part of the appeal of a startup is that you have the ability to be the person defining those things. And you, in doing so, you sort of define the culture of the company as you define how you respond to that kind of stuff. It makes me wonder because my experience in startup land was there was no such thing as a vacation. I remember sitting in, I think it was Keystone in Colorado in the Starbucks at the lodge, you know, furiously working on whatever project I was for whatever doomed startup I was at the time while all my friends were up skiing. and thinking I was doing the most important thing in the world. And, you know, that's part of how I formed my current philosophy on disconnecting for vacations. But also, like, it's kind of true in a startup that you really don't know which of these things is critical. And so you kind of have to treat them all as critical. And so is it even possible in a company that small to sort of unplug and disconnect and really take a true vacation? Is that something you can kind of enforce?
That's a hard thing to be able to say for sure. Like, I think it shifts, and it definitely... it has to be done in stages. Like, I think the vacation I took was a good example of that. It's like, I'm going to be pretty much inaccessible. Like, treat me like I'm out of the office, but there's a couple of days if we need to talk, these are the times for us to sync up. I'm going to be around and answering emails, checking in on Slack, things like that. And using that opportunity to be like, okay, over the last 2 days while I was completely off the grid, like what didn't happen? Okay, how can I solve for that? And from my earliest days as a programmer, one of my goals has always been to like work myself out of a job. And a lot of that is make sure that the tool is more resilient than I am. And as I've moved into leadership positions, I try to treat the team the same way, like make sure the team is more resilient than me and that I'm not the blocker of it. Whether that's making sure that there's documentation for the things that are in my head or making sure that there's automation in places where you really do need a whole lot of context. But I've always looked for those opportunities to try to pull that out. But like it is kind of a, okay, well, let's try this and see what happens. It's kind of a do it live situation where you're giving it a shot and see how much stress it can take and whether or not anything breaks, and look at it and be like, okay, well, what worked, what didn't? Okay, what's the next iteration of this? One of the fun things about doing that at a startup is that, or any small team, regardless if it's because the whole team is the whole company or because it's a small team at a larger company, you get to iterate really, really quickly when you're completely autonomous. Be like, oh, okay, well, okay, so deploys require an awful lot of context to boot up. Can we just put that in CD with CircleCI so somebody knows that they need to log in and say approve?
So I think it's worth noting that different companies at different stages have kind of different needs and expectations around things like vacations. I think vacations are just sort of a proxy for really important cultural touchstones of a company. And I think at startups, most of the successful startups you will see don't prioritize free time and, you know, slack in the line and free time and vacations and really generous leave policies. Intensity is an intentional part of the startup experience because you really don't know when the right pitch is going to come across the plate. And so you feel like you need to swing at pretty much everything. And companies that are a lot more stable, like you were saying earlier, Nick, have a really broad support network and a reasonable understanding of how they provide value in the marketplace. So it's harder to steer. It's harder to feel like you have influence over the direction of the company. But the side benefit is you get to that same stability allows you to, you know, leave the ship for a little bit and know that you're going to rejoin it and you'll be able to catch up on your backlog. And a lot of the stuff will have been handled. Some of the stuff you can just let drop forever and nobody cares. And some of the stuff you'll be able to catch up on. And that the sort of like organized chaos of startups kind of don't allow you to do that. But that's not by way of judgment of saying that startups don't have good cultural values because you can't take a, you know, a clean 2 week vacation, or they can't provide, you know, 12 weeks of parental leave, you know, the day that they open their doors. I think those are things that they accomplish and achieve and buy back by figuring out what their value is over time. And that makes them kind of, you know, kind of tough at the beginning sometimes and kind of intense. But over time, I think it's a good way to sort of start, as you start being able to buy those into your company, you get to start surfacing what the company's values actually are. And some places, like say they're trying to like retain that startup culture. Hey, we're trying to retain the startup culture, the intensity that got us here. We want that intensity to carry forward. And so you see these giant, you know, 500 person startups where nobody ever takes any vacation. Everybody's always on Slack. Everybody's checking every email and everything is super important. And that actually is like, I've seen that kind of become pretty toxic sometimes too. I don't know how you sort of navigate that, but I think part of a manager's job is to sort of push on that a little bit and start creating the culture for your team and create the what is acceptable. And I think a lot of that happens by example. And so I would say, like, you know, if you're in a startup and the example is like what you described to me, Travis, is super reasonable. I was not reasonable when I was at a startup. I was working 20-hour days, and I went on my vacation, and I was the hero that sacrificed my good time for the sake of everyone, and you went out and managed to have an actual vacation while being available enough. So I think, you know, you seem to have found that sort of middle path, and I think that's an example that you get to set for your team, and that actually, you know, you have a huge amount of influence over the culture of that company. Versus you get to a company the size of the company that Nick or I are at this point, the culture is pretty well established. Like, you can see patterns. I see the social norms at the company I'm at are people put an out-of-office message on their Slack with a date that they're coming back. They will often sign out of any channels that automatically opt them into things. They will make it clear that they're, you know, disconnecting notifications. They will make it clear. This is all the way up to VP and C-level executives.
Well, I think it has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be if you're going to have something like that. Otherwise, people feel like, well, they say that, but my boss didn't do it, or my boss's boss didn't do it. So in order for something like that to take hold, regardless of the size of the company, whether it's 5 people or 500 people, I think you have to have that executive leadership to say, this is how we're going to do things.
To some degree. I don't know that I entirely agree with that, though. And the reason I say that is because I think there is room to create a microclimate for your own team, where those expectations don't have to be followed quite so strictly. Like, I'm a big believer that people need rest and recovery to do their best work. They need to take time away periodically. And that's a tool that I regularly use in one-on-ones. If someone comes to me and says, you know, I'm having trouble being engaged, or I'm tired, or I'm struggling to do my best work right now, one of my first questions is, how long has it been since you took some time off?
Yep.
Because often that's the culprit, is they've just been working so hard and they're edging into burnout without really realizing it. So whether the company's supportive of that or not, as a manager, you have the tool to use some of those things in your team. Now, when it comes to taking your own vacation, it can be certainly more challenging if that support isn't present at the executive level.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a good point. And I can say this now because I don't work there anymore. But at a prior job, I used to tell people they had a very not generous PTO policy. They lumped sick time together with vacation time, and people were like always trying to like bargain and figure out how they could strategically apply their time off. And whenever I saw somebody edging toward burnout, I would say, you know, like, hey, when's the last time you took time off? Like, hopefully I would know, but I was managing, you know, almost 20 people at the time, so I didn't. And I would say, I think it's time for a dark day off. Like, don't file a PTO request. Just don't come in. Nobody's going to care. If there's heat to be taken, that's me. And there never was. There were never any real consequences because the work kept getting done. And you can, like you said, you can create a little bit of a microclimate, but that's edging toward that shit umbrella role. You're at risk of kind of, you know, burning yourself on behalf of the team. But, you know, there are times where that's not really avoidable if you're trying to create a healthy culture on a team. And sometimes, not always, that can pilot a culture that you go, hey, why is your team performing where other teams maybe aren't so much? And you go, well, we're doing a few things a little bit differently over here. And that can have influence on other teams, or you'll just be crushed under the wheel of the larger culture. Either one of those I've seen happen.
Something else we should talk about while we're talking about this is what to do about unlimited PTO policies.
Good question.
I'm a big fan, and it's not just because they stole my name when they set up their company, but I'm a big fan of what Travis CI was trying to do when they said they moved away from the unlimited vacation to the mandatory minimum vacation. Because very often, like, the startup world is like, oh yeah, you've unlimited vacation, take as much time as you want. I haven't had a day off in 500 days. You end up with that a lot, or people who just, if you've never been in that kind of environment where you have felt like you really had permission to just go dark for a couple of days here or there, or take a week or two off, unlimited vacation can be kind of intimidating because you don't know, like, if I have 3 weeks of vacation or 4 weeks of vacation or 6 weeks of vacation, whatever that number is, and I'm going to have that this year, and I can use it or I can lose it, or so many of those days can roll over to the next year, I can be very tactical about how I use that. But a lot of people don't feel comfortable making those decisions for themselves when they don't have here's what you have to do. I think as a manager, I've always played the role when I've been at companies with that, like that, of doing a lot of like what it sounds like you do, Brandon, where it's like, okay, here, you need to take some time off. Or somebody comes and says, I'm going to take a week, but I'm going to take my computer and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm like, well, what's the worst thing that happens if you're gone? and you don't have your computer. Okay, well, is there anything that you can do in the next 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks between now and then to mitigate that? Like, what can you do to make sure that that can't play out? And that helps with the resiliency of the company if you and the whole team if you do something like that.
I think the other thing to say is if you are in, well, let me roll back and talk about when I joined GitHub. One of the things that is talked about in the onboarding is the cultural expectation around how we use PTO. And we don't have a minimum PTO policy, but there is a company line around that, around approximately how much we want to see everybody take in a given year. And, you know, sometimes companies say those things and aren't very good about living them out, but that's not the case. We actually live out that cultural expectation. But for me, one of the mantles that I take on in leading in that environment is making sure that my team is taking enough time off and that I am helping us craft a backlog of work that has enough margin in it for them to do that and for them to feel comfortable taking that time off. And so the other part of it is me making sure I'm taking time off myself and setting that example.
Yeah, I think that's key in any very open-ended time off policy. The leaders that you see, so regardless of what level you are, short of being CEO, there's always going to be somebody else that you're looking to say, okay, how are they handling this? And making sure that you're setting the example for the people who are looking up to you for guidance on how the company is going to be run, I think is a key in order to making sure that the unlimited PTO doesn't become that BS. Yeah, we have unlimited PTO.
So if you have an unlimited PTO policy, I think I really like what you said, Nick, both of the things that you said about the setting the example and about crafting a backlog of work that's amenable to it. Because if you have an unlimited PTO policy, it is constantly under attack. The fact is that unlimited PTO policies are constantly under attack from forces all around it. They're under attack from social norm expectations. Like, what are we doing here socially? They're under attack from pressures, work pressures. Like, okay, now is not a very good time. They're under attack from my boss didn't do this. You know, like there are a dozen reasons now not to take the time. And fundamentally, I'm a big fan. I've said this. I don't know if I've said this on this podcast, but I know that something I've just come to say a lot is avoid unclear contracts. And unlimited PTO policy is by definition an unclear contract, because you could take enough vacation to get fired. And so everybody's like, well, you've given me a loaded gun of a vacation policy, and I'm not sure how to use this. And everybody's going to be very cautious about what that means for them until they feel safe to use it that way. And one of the ways you make it safe to use is you make those expectations very clear. When I was in charge of deciding what vacation policy to set up, at the company that I ran, I was like, you know, we went through all these different iterations. We started with an unlimited PTO policy and we realized nobody was ever taking vacation because I didn't take any vacation and my partner didn't hardly take any vacation. So, you know, sure enough, everybody came in and was like, I guess vacations aren't a thing here. Well, I was like, why aren't people taking vacations? Well, we were assaulting, you know, that vacation policy from all the different, you know, ways where it wasn't safe to take a vacation because your boss didn't do it. And it wasn't clear what you could do. So what I would start telling people is assume it's a 3 week paid time off policy. And then as we, you know, grew and became more stable, I'm like, okay, assume it's a 4 week paid vacation policy. And they're like, well, why don't you just make it a 4 weeks of paid vacation policy? And I was like, that's a really good question. And at that point, we switched to a 3 week minimum. And then after an incident, we made it a 5 week maximum. So, and then we added notice. So, yeah, please don't just disappear for a month. And we're like, well, I guess, like, according to our unclear contract, that's not a fireable offense that a person could just disappear for a month. So, yeah, like, I like clarity, but I also like I don't love feeling kind of tied to something. But I really like how at GitHub, when you started there, they said, hey, assume this is what, you know, this is approximately what this means. And then if you will observe, and it doesn't take long in a big company because you see all this evidence, there's always somebody on PTO.
Yep.
And no meeting is complete. Have you noticed that? Like, certainly in my summer, I haven't been to a meeting where all the attendees were there. Somebody is always on vacation.
Yep.
Somebody's, you know, their Slack status is set to, you know, a little beach umbrella emoji. So I do think that it's possible to get to that place. And I'm really impressed with the way I've seen companies sort of live that. And it made me feel extremely safe. That's why I felt like I'd only been there for a few weeks, but I felt very comfortable being like, it seems like the thing to do here is just to unplug. And I came back feeling great. That's kind of the first time at any company I've ever felt safe to do that. So maybe there are advantages to bigger companies after all.
Yeah, one of the things I said to my team when I came back is that this is the first time I've taken a real vacation in a while because I really was able to put everything down.
So one sort of follow-up question I want to ask, because this kind of speaks to something that Travis, you and Nick were talking about earlier, about when you were talking about creating a little microclimate for your team and not necessarily being able to participate in that microclimate fully because you are kind of that buffer between senior leadership culture and your team's culture. As the owner of a company, I can tell you, I know exactly how that is because there's no such thing as a true vacation. You don't even get a good night's sleep if you own a company. Like that just doesn't happen. You are thinking that's your life. You live it and you think it. And I think that carries through in leadership roles. And it's part of why I've stepped away from senior leadership roles. You know, I've been in more senior leadership roles than, you know, than manager or senior manager before. But what they ask of you, I didn't personally find compatible with the, you know, at those times in my life with the life that I wanted to live. And as I talked to other people, there was a person at one of my workplaces that was like, oh yeah, I don't want to be a vice president. You know, like I've been vice president of companies before. Vice president means you don't switch off this job. Your life and your job are deeply intertwined. And I decided that wasn't the life I wanted. And it was consistent in every role I looked at. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's kind of my experience too. And I don't know if that's universal, but it's certainly like, well, that's a couple of data points. I want to kind of like ask you, y'all are in different leadership roles. You've been at very senior vice president level or higher leadership roles in companies. Have you found that to be true? Are there different expectations for like work-life balance type stuff at different positions in a company?
So in my experience, yes. And I think that's always been a key when I've taken on those roles. Is this something that I'm super passionate about and want to expend all of my mental energy on, or all of the mental energy that I'm willing to allot to work? And I think depending on the size of the company, the structure of the company, that happens somewhere between director and VP. But definitely once you hit that VP level and above, you start to get into that kind of situation where it's like, all right, I'm going to be thinking about this. Even if I am on vacation, even if I am completely unplugged, I might pull out my iPad or my iPhone and start jotting down some notes on something that I'm thinking about and mark it, flag it as something to come back to in a week or two when I'm back in the office. I've definitely had those situations where I've been pretty much unplugged. I'm not checking in on anything. My email is completely on auto response and pretty much all push notifications are turned off except for calls and text messages. But then been sitting there thinking, well, that one thing that I was thinking about that I've been working on for the last 2 months, what if I did this? And you don't have that luxury of just completely turning off, or at least I don't. I shouldn't project onto everybody else. This is a sample size of one. But in my experience, that's definitely been what I've witnessed in myself. And that may just be a personal inability to shut off on my side.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
I think there is a crucial nugget of wisdom in the last thing that you said there, in that when you get in those roles, you sort of feel more of the weight of the company on your shoulders and you get pulled more into things. I don't know that it's about company expectations as much as it is about expectations on yourself and what you're delivering in that role and the responsibilities that you have to the people that depend upon you. That's certainly been my experience when I've had a larger team in one of those roles. But at the same time, I've been VP of a team of four, and the expectations weren't that. It was much more akin to the expectations that I would have of myself in a typical team lead type situation, not nearly as stressful. And so I think a lot of it is understanding your relationship to the company and the things that you're responsible for and figuring out how you can fulfill all the things that you're responsible for and enforce the boundaries that you're comfortable enforcing at the same time. And that balance is going to be different for every person and every job. And it's something that you always have to work out for yourself. And it's also, we should call out that it's seasonal, right? Because in every role, you go through seasons when the company needs more from you and seasons when you do have more flexibility to go on vacation and when the work will continue on its own while you're out. Like, if I were to try to take a 2-week vacation in the middle of quarterly planning, that probably wouldn't go so well for my team.
Yeah.
But if we get through planning and everybody's in an execution cadence, then I can probably step out for 2 weeks and there's enough work defined and enough order to the way that the teams are operating that that's going to be just fine.
So the mental picture, as you were describing that, the mental picture for me was like an XY diagram of time as the horizontal axis and stakes as the vertical axis. And the seasonality is the stakes go up at certain times of year. You know, in a big company, you may have a big conference that you're launching things at, or you may have quarterly earnings reports or something like that. You know, like there are ebbs and flows to stakes. And you're like, oh, now's a low stakes time. You know, like literally the company I'm at now shuts down between Christmas and New Year's. Skeleton crew only. And the stakes are very low. So everybody just goes on vacation, essentially. There are other times where the stakes are going to be very high. And you do, like you mentioned, you don't want to be absent when the future of your team's fate is being decided, you know, where you 2 to 6 months of the work that you're about to do and the importance it is to your team, they need to have representation there. And that would be a bad time to be on vacation. And so understanding the ebbs and flows to those stakes allows you to kind of pace yourself, knowing that, like, and that's a very healthy cadence. My experience in startups is you can't tell. The stakes always feel like they're at maximum pitch. And so you have to have sort of that, you have to learn to modulate that yourself. That requires a little bit of extra fortitude. So I really respect people at startups that are able to bring the maturity to sort of modulate those ebbs and flows, so that you can kind of manufacture those and read the tea leaves and say, now is actually an okay time for you to take a vacation. Now is, you know, we have this big thing coming up, or this contract may or may not happen, but I think it's going to be fine. I got it. But I think that also means absorbing a lot. And I wasn't able to find a way to sustainably occupy a senior leadership role in a startup, but, you know, maybe a more mature version of myself would. But I super respect people that are able to pull that off. But I think that speaks to the larger challenge of knowing that stakes are high. And allowing people to sort of this, you know, when you talk about the difference between the shit umbrella and the heat shield, I think heat shielding is knowing that the stakes are high and allowing people to feel like things are evened out a little bit and that it's okay. Hey, you know what? If you're going to have people taking parental leave, you're not going to tell them that the stakes are really high right now and this is not a great time to take parental leave. You're going to be like, yeah, that's great. I'm so happy for you. And you'll figure it out. I think that's appropriate heat shielding. That feels like within the realm of reason. It's just, you know, that can be kind of difficult.
To your point there, one of the things that's been key for me is really zeroing in on like what is important and what absolutely needs 100% of my attention versus not. And that's a really hard thing to get used to. I know as I moved into leadership positions early on in my career, it was really hard to figure out, okay, this seems really, really important, but is it important or is it just something that feels urgent and something that I'm putting more pressure on myself than the rest of the team, the rest of the company is? And I still catch myself doing that, thinking, okay, we've got to figure out how to ship this thing at this time. It's super important. There's no wiggle room at all. And then you're like, okay, this can't happen. And you start having that conversation. Once you've completely burned yourself out, or marched right up to it. And there was like, yeah, let's figure out a different way to make that work. And it's really easy to kind of build something up in your head as this is the end of the company if I don't figure this out. This is the end of my tenure at this company if I don't figure this out. I'm being a little facetious, but sometimes when you're in that spiral of like, oh, I got to figure out how to make all this work and you're putting that pressure on yourself, it can be really easy to get into that mindset and not be able to step back. And like what I said earlier, talking to somebody who is worried about taking vacation, say, hey, what's the worst thing that could happen if you're inaccessible for 2 weeks? Do that with yourself sometimes. This is a recurring theme. I feel like I've said this a couple of times in various different topics, but it's often really easy for us to say, oh, this is how I'm going to deal with my team, and then not deal with yourself the exact same way and not give yourself that kindness that you would give to any one of your worst team members.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something about the human ego that really wants to believe that the whole world is going to fall apart if you step out of it.
Absolutely.
And that's something that you always got to be pushing back on. But I think there's something else here as well. I think specifically around what you're just talking about, Travis, the first time you see any situation, it feels like a really big deal. But then the subsequent times that you experience it, you have a different frame of reference on that situation, and it doesn't feel quite as important. And it's an effect that I've definitely noticed as I've gotten older and as I've lived a little bit more life. Some of these things that I used to freak out about just don't seem quite as important to me now as they used to. But I'll still walk into a new situation that maybe it's something that I'm feeling really stretched in. And that's where the old ego kicks in and tells me the world's going to fall apart if I'm not involved.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what the negative impact of dropping the ball in those situations are. But when you have seen the ball get dropped and you've seen the positive impact of a win and the negative impact, and you go, actually, this isn't an order of magnitude difference. This is marginal. We're talking about, you know, I can measure it in single digit percent, the cost to the team of letting this completely fall apart. We can risk it. And so your risk tolerance for things that are more known goes up. And so your ability to sort of like modulate in those situations, that spoke to me so much when you talked about sort of getting older and that you encounter more situations that are reasonably familiar and you can run that risk trade-off and you go, I'm fine with the risk profile here, actually. But every time it's novel, you're like, I don't know the risk profile here. This is really freaking me out, man. Like, all hands on deck. And then you put the work in to alleviate the worst case scenario and you create the best case scenario. And then next time you encounter, you went, yeah, the difference actually was marginal the last time I freaked out about this. So you sort of, hopefully you can pattern match a little bit and learn to sort of trust that your first instinct to kind of freak out about something is probably wrong because you've been wrong about it almost every time. At least in my case, I've been wrong about it almost every time when I chose to freak out about something. And when it's really worth freaking out about, somebody will tell you, hey, listen, this is a $25 million account and you can't drop this. And you're like, oh, okay. This is, and so what I generally tell people around like the balance thing is, and this actually turns out to also not be true, but I generally tell people, I might ask you for two a year. Twice a year, I might ask the team to really stretch and really pour, you know, like we've got, there may be one to two major important events, milestones, releases, whatever in a year that I really need the team to kind of come together around, and you'll know, we'll all know. And the win on the other side, like we're taking a big risk as a team to focus on that, but we think there's something really big on the other side. And the reality is it's really more like once every couple of years that I ask that of a team. But I, you know, I tell people like once to twice a year, I might ask for that, which means that 10 to, you know, let's say that's like 90% of the time, there's lots more flexibility. And 10% of the time, there may be less flexibility, but you'll know which mode you're in.
So another term that I've heard recently, I know you just mentioned work-life balance. I heard someone refer to it in a different way, and I'm curious to get your reaction to this. I heard someone, and I can't remember who, say that you shouldn't strive for work-life balance. You should strive for work-life integration. And I think what they meant by that is not that you should work so hard to draw stark boundaries, but you should figure out how to make the non-work parts of your life and the work parts of your life work together the best they can.
I can get down with that. The sense that people should be laying down extremely clear and firm boundaries between work experience and life experience will come back and bite you, because then suddenly you don't feel like you're at liberty to take your dog to the vet in the middle of the day, or, you know, that your kid comes in and is it weird that your kid comes in while you're in a meeting if you're working remotely and they come in and like stare at your screen and get between you and your screen? Like not in my experience, actually, people are super cool about stuff like that. And you go, oh, yeah, you're a person with a life. I do worry about the consequences of letting too much of those two things bleed together. I'm not sure about that. I don't know. I need to think about it. Do you have feelings about it?
So I have worked with people, had friends who have really tried to live, as you put it, an integrated life, and friends who have just like, nope, I don't even hang out with people that do the work that I do. Like if I end up hanging out with another programmer, it's a happy accident and we don't talk shop. I'm speaking for other friends. I talk shop all the time. I almost can't stop talking about it. So I think it's really a personal thing. I have definitely witnessed, especially at larger companies where you can see a more different perspectives and different personal takes on it, where you have more freedom to make that choice yourself. I've definitely seen teams where there are people that have a very stark line, and it's like, oh, well, maybe we don't want to talk to that team about this thing because they're not going to get it done. So you start, people start to select, or they'll be like, oh, this team here, this guy and that girl, they just like totally pour everything into it. So let's put this big thing on them because they're not going to sleep for the next 3 months to make sure this ships. So I've seen it abused too. So trying to find that like good balance, that's always what I try to do. I like the idea of integration because integration is not a balance assumes that there's two completely opposite things that you're trying to balance a scale and there are two forces opposed to each other to make this work. Integration definitely does feel like a more holistic thing. There's the cynic in me that starts to have the detector go off. It's like, and where's the session that I can go to hear about this? I'm sure you have a workshop, right? And there's books, right?
Yeah, that's why I wish I could remember where I heard it. But I think I have a similar reaction to it. I think my reaction to it is very much it feels, whereas balance feels like a stark kind of black and white thing. Work-life integration feels like something that's more on a spectrum. And it feels like you can fail at work-life balance. But it doesn't... Yeah. Like there's not this guilt-inducing notion that work-life integration brings into my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. To take that point a little bit further, I can definitely see that. Like, the scales are balanced or they're not. They're in balance or they're out of balance. But integration definitely does feel a lot more fluid. And to your point earlier, Brandon, talking about how it kind of goes through ebbs and flows, there's going to be certain periods where the integration means that, yeah, there's going to be 10 or 12 hour days for a couple of weeks, or maybe a weekend here or there. But there are also going to be periods where you're putting in 20 hours for the week and getting everything and then some accomplished that you need to. And both of those are okay. It wasn't like you had to shift up your balance in order to make that work. It's just like, oh, this is how things go.
Yeah. And I think this is another thing that's a little weird and unique to knowledge work in general, the kind of knowledge work or management work that you do, where a lot of your work is going to happen when you're like, you know, you're sitting there eating your Cheerios and you're like, oh my gosh, I just realized the way that I need to approach this project to get this other team involved. This is great. This is for everybody. And you just immediately start furiously writing notes down or whatever, versus like, if you're waiting tables, you're not really worried about work-life integration. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, I just had a really great way to carry more items to the table on my way there. I just had this flash of inspiration. It's sort of unique to knowledge work, and it's kind of a cool, and I want to acknowledge that it's sort of a privilege in itself that the idea of work-life integration is something that is like a graduation of something versus, you know, you go to work and you punch a clock and do something that you don't really love for a period of time, and then you end your day and get back to whatever your life is. I think that is sort of the old model versus new model of work that we are fortunate enough to be able to participate in. I think that's really cool. And so I want to think on this some more, because I think work-life integration is definitely a potential vector for abuse. And I guarantee you there are people that are going to abuse it. And I guess that's part of your job as a manager. If you're going to sort of think of this way, recognize that work-life integration isn't an excuse to infiltrate every part of somebody's life with work and suffuse it into every area of somebody's life. And I know there are companies out there that will do that. So I just wanted to, like, with that little bit of caution, I really like the idea of it being more holistic because it acknowledges the reality that life intrudes on into your workday, the parts of your, and that, you know, the wacky tweet you send in the middle of the day might actually like get somebody to acknowledge you that winds up being somebody that's like, hey, I want to work with this person. And you actually were doing a recruiting activity. You know, those things do happen.
Yeah. Being in the space of knowledge work, going with that phrasing, it is definitely different. And I think this is just something new that everybody's having to kind of come to terms with. There's a big difference when, yeah, you're working an 8-hour day, but you're not going into a manufacturing plant and using the machinery that's there to create widgets. You're using the gray matter between your ears, and you can't just turn that off. You can't just walk away and leave that. And I think that's where a lot of the whole idea of work-life balance starts to fall down. If you're actively cutting off part of the time and saying, yeah, I'm just not, that's a great idea. I'm don't worry about it. I'll come back to it tomorrow. That's going to be a problem. And you're not going to be getting the work out of yourself that you possibly could. And you're creating some artificial barriers for yourself by doing that. Some people thrive in that and they want to do that. I remember a story from Tom Waits. He was stuck in traffic on the 405 and had this song that he'd been thinking about just come to him. And he started yelling at his muse saying, no, absolutely not. I've been sitting in a studio for the last 2 weeks and this hasn't come. You're going to wait an hour and then we'll come back and write this. He's having this conversation with himself in his car. And I wish I could remember the song that it was that he wrote. He ended up a few hours later getting back to the studio. When he sat down to do his work, the song was there. So for some people that works. For me, I'm not one of them. And I end up in that situation where that problem that I've been really struggling with at work, I sit down and I'm on the beach and I'm like, oh, hey, this is how I can solve that. I want to give myself just enough of a breadcrumb trail so that I can find my way back there when I am back and fully focused on work.
And speaking to that work-life integration thing, like what you just described brought up something else for me, which is you were talking earlier about kind of getting stuck. You know, you were talking about having a problem and you get stuck on earlier, like where you get stuck in this loop where, you know, you kind of can't see through the fog anymore at work and you're starting to feel like burnout creep in. Like that is actually like when to stop. And part of work-life integration is I think if I'm going to borrow this term from Nick, so I've never used that phrase before this podcast in my life, but I'm going to say part of what I define as work-life integration now as of 9 minutes ago is the idea that you can and should remember to pause periodically. And the same thing is that at any time an idea may occur to you and it's time to pull your car over, turn around, go back to the studio. The flip side of this is at any time it may be time to pause and say, you know what actually I need is a nap. And that's a weird thing to say. I mean, as a manager, you probably don't have that luxury because your calendar probably looks like a complete nightmare. And the idea of taking a break in your day to go do something else is ludicrous. But having that idea in your head that, hold on, it's time for me to step away. I need to schedule a vacation. I need to take, you know, and I'm going to go ahead and take an afternoon for myself. I'm going to put a calendar event in there that says just thinky time or whatever. Nick, I saw you actually, and this is probably a whole separate topic, but I saw you ask about self-care
yep.
on Twitter. I think we should link to that in the show notes and it may be its own topic at some point.
Yep. I've got a 3-hour block in my calendar tomorrow morning to go work at a coffee shop. And I work at a coffee shop on purpose because I literally cannot hop on a meeting if I am in a noisy coffee shop.
Can you just jump on a quick call?
So it's not for other people. It's not for other people who might want to abuse my calendar. It's for me. It's a barrier for me so that I'm in an environment where I literally can't take a call. And it's, you know, to your point about artificial barriers, it's an artificial barrier that I've put in place so that I can have a block of think time and so that I will allow myself that luxury. Because otherwise the temptation is as a manager to always be on, always be available. It's our job to be interruptible, right? But it turns out that not all of our work can be done if we are constantly interruptible.
Yeah, I remember a CEO of a company I had blocked out, like I think it was an hour and a half every morning to read the Wall Street Journal cover to cover. And I walked in and they're reading the Wall Street Journal. They're like, not now. And I'm like, you're not doing anything. They're like, get out. And I was like, what a jerk. And it turns out, no. Like that was genius. That was an act of genius, actually. I totally recognize
that. Yeah, it's funny. The thing that I learned from that Twitter thread is that my 3-hour block may not be enough. That's the TLDR from that Twitter thread, is that some of the people that I admire most in engineering leadership block out at least a full day a week for this kind of stuff. And they're people with jobs that much more is sitting on their shoulders than what I have sitting on my shoulders right now.
That's a good point. Even in high stakes situations, the vacations should be possible. Think time should be possible. Self-care should be possible.
Not only possible, but necessary.
I've definitely run into CEOs at coffee shops before where I'm meeting somebody to grab coffee in the morning and run into the CEO. Hey, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm getting some work done. And you look at their calendar and there's like a 4-hour meeting that is very nondescript. And it's them sitting in a coffee shop. So that they can get some work that's not just walking into whatever meeting is on their calendar.
That's when you flip your calendar just to say busy instead of actually have all your descriptions in it. Tell Google Calendar, no, that's all the detail you get, busy. I think that's probably as good a place to pause as any. And it's been really great to have a little bit of a lighter schedule this summer for everybody that was hoping for more podcasts this summer. I apologize, but I hope that you had a summer vacation as well as us. I hope that if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, you had a winter vacation of some kind. I'm not sure how that works. I don't know if they take it on the same schedule. But we want to thank you for joining us this time. I think I definitely learned a lot this week. And I'm going to think more on the topic of work-life integration and what that means. And for everybody listening, we love when you rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to get your topic suggestions. If you want to check us out on Twitter at Managing Up Show, we love hearing from people and what their podcast topic ideas are or questions that you have or challenges that you have that you'd like us to discuss. You can get at us there or you can reach out to us individually. I am Tev Viking on Twitter.
I am NMeans on Twitter.
And I am T Swicegood most everywhere.
And as always, we love when you share the podcast with your friends. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us today, and we will see you again next time.